Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Securing Bridges podcast. You're about to join Alyssa Miller as she sits down with senior and executive security leaders to share stories of success and failure while working across business teams. It's time to build and secure the bridge to the business. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Heck yeah, here we are again, Securing Bridges. We are back, another episode, 2 weeks off. Sorry about that. We had a little unplanned complication last week. You know, that's how things go. But super excited to be back here. We got another great show. We're in 2023 now. We're almost already all through January. I can't believe it, but we're still going. We got lots of guests lining up for you this year again. It's the same show, just another year and still doing our thing. So thanks for joining us. Like I said, we've got another great guest this week, just like we do every week. And I'm super excited. I was really kind of looking forward to this one. I mean, I look forward to them all. Don't get me wrong. That was kind of a silly thing to say, but you know what? Here we are. I'm going to shut up now because we have with us today, it's Trisha Howard. Hey, Trisha.
Hi. How's it going? Oh my gosh. I am cold. It is super cold here. I'm super excited. It's so nice to like look out and see snow though. I appreciate that a lot.
I wish I had your same love for the snow. I really don't. It's snowing here right now and I could do without it.
Yeah. I think it's probably because I just grew up in a place where it was never happened. Like wild for it to happen that it's like, I don't know. I love it. Winter Wonderland.
I've been dealing with 40 plus years. I'm kind of over it. But
Fair enough.
So, oh my God, you're here on the show. It's been great. I'm so excited. So tell the folks out there who don't know who you are and who should be finding out who you are and following you on all of the socials, who it is that you are and what you do.
Sure. So I'm Trisha Howard, aka Trisha Kicks Sass. And I like to describe myself as an artist gone rogue who ended up in the wonderful world of cybersecurity. So I have a degree in theater arts with primarily a performance focus. I used to sing opera and, you know, do the whole performance gambit, which I still am active in today. But by complete accident, ended up in this industry, which I have found is like actually kind of a common thing, which is really funny. But I did. It truly was an accident. And I started like creating my own content and found ways to bring my artistic point of view into the security world, which I do in a number of ways, but as of late, mostly with security parody song videos, which is always a fun time. In the corporate space, I work for Akamai Technologies. I work in their security research organization, or ASR core team. So I'm responsible for helping researchers tell their stories. And so I work kind of at that crux of marketing and research. So it's a really exciting, like I'm biased because obviously wouldn't have taken the job if I didn't like it, but I think it's like one of the coolest jobs.
That's good. We don't always have that luxury of being
true. This is many years of work that now finally pulls up. So yes, totally agree.
It is. So if anybody's paying attention, you can kind of tell why I really wanted to get Trisha on the show. Like there's so much here to unpack. Because, I mean, what you're doing from a marketing side, first of all, fits right with the theme of the show. But you know what? I kind of want to dig into first kind of how we really got to interacting. I think we started following each other on socials back in like probably 2019.
Yeah. Pre-pandemic.
But it was when the pandemic hit. Oh my God. This girl shows up on Twitter with her dramatic readings of emails. And I was like, this is pure gold. Oh, man. So talk to me. How did we end up doing dramatic readings of bad marketing emails?
Oh my gosh.
Bad sales emails.
Oh my gosh. So what is so hilarious about this is like, I feel like when people expect me to have this like aha moment. Like I was in bed at 2 a.m. and was like, oh my gosh, this is what the industry needs. No, I was up early for a virtual event, and it was in the UK. So I had to be up and like camera ready at, you know, 3 a.m. So I was very, very tired. And so I had one too many coffees, and I got this sales email, and it was horrible. Like it was so bad. It was the fourth one in a series, and it was so dramatic. Like I literally read it out loud. I would do this at home, by the way, to my dog, who may or may not make an appearance. I would get these emails and I would dramatically read them to him. And it was like my, pandemic, I live by myself entertainment. And I got one and I did it. I was like, you know what? I should just record this. I pulled out my phone, record it, doing it very dramatically as I was reading it, and it took off. And I couldn't believe that it took off. I was like, oh, wow, okay. And so then I kind of turned it into a series for a while, but that's it.
But it was gold. I think it took off because we've all been there, whether it's on LinkedIn, which I don't know what in the world. I'm sorry. Microsoft owns LinkedIn. Microsoft, I don't know what you're doing with that platform, but God, please stop. When it was always kind of like a, you know, maybe not where a lot of people really wanted to live, but you lived there because, you know, career. Now it is just a spam platform. Like I'm convinced it is all it is for. And so we've all seen those. And I think that's why it resonated with people, because some of these emails are just so bad. Literally today, have you heard of, I get this email, have you heard of XYZ product? Is that the same? This was the email back to him. Is that the same XYZ product that we've got 10,000 licenses of right now?
Oh man.
Like, how do you miss on that? And that, and this is, you know, this is the thing that like, I don't even know how we got there. How did this get so bad?
I'll tell you why. So I started my career in sales, and there were so many things that I learned once I got involved with the community directly on Twitter that I was taught were good things, right? Like that were good, like what you just said, a traditional sales leader would be like, well, you know what? You got Alyssa's attention. You got Alyssa to respond. What? Like, meanwhile, if the rep who's handling your account, like the account manager, found out about that, of course they're going to be furious. Like they've spent years possibly cultivating this relationship, and somebody who is being taught that that these practices are okay could potentially jeopardize that. There are real consequences there. And so it's sad to me. So actually on that note, when I started doing DRCSE, dramatically reading cold sales emails, I started adding a 1A section of that, which was DRCSE explained. And it was where I broke the emails down and said, this is what you should have done. This is why I reacted this way, this, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And to combat some of that misinformation that is taught, because that's how we got here. People would rather get attention than be right.
Yeah. Well, seeing that, and I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because, you know, I'll admit I throw them out there on social media sometimes when I get some of the really bad ones, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't name and shame. Mm-hmm. And I've had people blast me for, well, why do you keep complaining about these? This just happens. And then I get, you know, well, why won't you name and shame? Well,
right.
Both for the same reason. There is definitely something for salespeople to learn from this, because let's be honest, a lot of people that are in cybersecurity sales don't know anything about cybersecurity, right? Now, there are also those, you and I know a few of them, yourself included at one time. There are a lot of great salespeople out there who do know this space. But for those who don't, who are trying to learn it, it's just like anyone else who's trying to learn any other part of cybersecurity. I want to help them. I want to help them learn from this because, to your point, I mean, that, yes, believe me, myself and that particular account rep will be having a conversation about that. Yep. I've had these come up before. I actually have had to have pretty, you know, uncomfortable conversations with my representatives from different organizations where I got some awful email or, you know, hideous spam where your unsubscribe button doesn't work. You know, those are things that are problematic.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How do we get that message out there better?
Oh man. So I actually have given a couple of talks on this at marketing conferences, which is that we need to spend less time listening to each other and spend more time listening to our customers, right? Like, which seems kind of obvious, but it's clearly not, right? So the community, the one thing for better or worse about the InfoSec community is we're loud. We say what we want, right? Like, so if somebody's looking for what to do or what not to do, we're not shy about it. You know what I mean? And that's great. I think that's awesome. That's a huge learning opportunity. I think what we need to do, we as sales and marketing people need to do is kind of like remove the ego a little bit and try and see where you're coming from and vice versa, right? This is not a one-sided problem because sales and marketing people are bitter because there have been people on the other side who are just mean, right? And yeah, say nasty things about us just for a profession. This is a job too, right? So that needs to have its own respect. But there needs to be a lot more, I think, cross training and more like value training instead of like, oh, it doesn't matter how, just get their attention. No, don't do that.
and that's a thing, you know, there's always been kind of that, you know, I sort of correlate it with the any press is good press kind of thing. It's the same approach in sales.
Yes.
And yeah, maybe that worked to a point, but when you are pissing off the person you're trying to get to, like you're trying to get to that decision maker, you're trying to get to that, you know, that director or that CISO or whoever it is that you're trying to connect with, if you do something that ticks them off, I can promise you being on the receiving end of that, it can have damaging consequences for your organization. I mean, there are companies, I'll tell you right now, because of their emails, I've gone to my email team and said, can you just block their entire domain? We don't need to hear from them ever again.
Okay. Like, you know? Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah. So how did that work for you? Right. Because you sent me 7 unsolicited emails that I never responded to a one and kept trying to unsolicited schedule, you know,
is a tactic that I will never understand. Just randomly sending an email invite. That's a really good way to get blocked. There has to be a respect for time on both sides, right? Like, just a respect. I guess you could just pause it right there.
Yeah, just mutual respect, right? And that's the thing. And I kind of wonder, like, when you send me some unsolicited calendar invite, what are you going to do if I actually accept that and I get on the call and I'm like, what the hell is this about?
Yep.
Because a lot of people, believe it or not, do actually use the auto accept feature.
Wait, what?
Never me. Yes, people do.
What?
The auto accept feature, where it automatically accepts if you've got the time open and automatically denies if you don't. Yeah, bad idea. Never. I still run into people who use it. And, you know, so it's like, okay, so what happens then? Then what do you say? I mean, how does that uncomfortable conversation go?
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to focus on what you said, because there are a lot of people who are genuinely shitty to salespeople.
Yes.
And that's problematic too. I mean, I'll tell you first and foremost, as a CISO, I need salespeople. They bring me products. They help me get stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as long as there's that respect, if you don't come to me, you know, and acting like a fool, yeah, I'm going to, you know, I'll gently just say, hey, you know what? Nope. I'm not interested right now. Hey, I don't want to look at your SIM product. We're converting to a brand new SIM right now. There's no point, you know, stuff like that. But it's just, so from that sales side, that's a challenge too, because I wonder how much of the problem we help create in cybersecurity by the way we react to salespeople.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, oh gosh, it's one of those like chicken or the egg conversations, I feel too, where it's like, well, but if sales weren't annoying, we wouldn't react that way. And it's like, yeah, but if you were more willing to, like, I could see where it it goes on both sides. I like to go by the mantra of like, just respect that it's someone's job, right? And go at it in that way. If I find myself, and introspection, if I find myself personally offended by this email, I need to see why. Why is that? Is this because they're being disrespectful? Is it because they are not respecting my time? Is it because they're doing something that could actually have bad consequences? Like I had a friend of mine who was a CISO who had a sales rep call into their emergency line to try and do a sales pitch. That's unacceptable. You do not call into the help desk and tell us, yeah, exactly. That's unacceptable. Like that stuff needs to stop. That's not, don't do that. Right. I think but on the flip side, just because someone is doing their job doesn't mean that they deserve to be berated. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I got on the phones. I started my job in inside sales, which is all cold calling, not for the faint of heart. You realize who is not happy at home real quick based on how they answer the phone. And you know, just being berated for nothing. You chose to pick up the phone. All right. So take some responsibility here. If you didn't want to be bothered, you didn't want to be bothered. Like we have caller ID. We've had that for many years. So I think to answer your question, it's just a lot of like trying to see what the other side. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like trying to understand what the other side is.
Well, and I'm going to do something I'm not supposed to do. I'm going to reference what we talked about before the show.
Okay.
I know that that's just like that. There's all sorts of theories on why it's a bad thing to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because yes, we do talk before the show. Newsflash. But no, one of the things we're talking about was even recognizing that sales, cybersecurity sales, is a legitimate job in cybersecurity.
Yes.
Right. Now, like I said before, you and I both know there are salespeople selling cybersecurity products who are career salespeople who don't really know cybersecurity. And that's right. Okay. I actually don't have a problem with that. And there are people in cybersecurity sales who know a complete crap ton of stuff about cybersecurity and who are doing amazing work. And I think a lot of times there tends to be that belittling almost of salespeople, like it's an unskilled job or something like that. I don't know about you. See, you were in sales. I've never worked sales. You know why? Because I would suck at it. Would you have described cold calling? Like, no. I when I was a kid, well, kid, teenager, almost adult, you know, I had somebody try to get me into sales once. I'm like, no, I can't work on a commission. I'll be starving because I would awful at this job. Yeah. So, I mean, can you kind of, as someone who's come into that, you've got the cybersecurity experience and you've worked in that and you're even in marketing now, which is sales adjacent, we'll say.
Yeah, right. Yep.
You know, it's not sales. Please don't confuse the two people.
No, they're not. They're very different. They're
definitely not the same thing. But I mean, kind of help share some of that perspective because that's got to be, I mean, it's got to feel unfair at times.
Yeah, it does. So for reference, my metrics, and they were all metrics based. So I had to make at least 75 cold calls a day. I had to, and they were tracked and they were recorded so that they could be reviewed later and making sure we're actually doing them. That does not include any cold outreach on email. That does not include any other actual meetings with customers. Like it did not matter if I had 6 meetings that were with like current clients, I still had to make my 75 calls a day. It's a lot of work. You are never off. You are never off when you are in sales. I got some of my best deals meeting people in random places and starting to talk about my job. You are never off. Okay. So it is, it's exhausting. And when, I mean, I wasn't kidding. Like I would call people and they would answer the phone and realize that I was a salesperson and take out every aggression they have in their life on me. No reason. All right. I would go, hi, this is Trisha, blah, blah, blah. I was wanting to talk to you about the problems within MFA today. Do you have a few minutes? Right. There's a really easy way. You could literally just hang up, which I honestly preferred. Or you could say, you know what? No, sorry. I just don't have enough time. Okay. Well, do you have enough time? No, this really just isn't time for me. Okay. This is where sales needs the education because you will be taught to not take the no.
Yes.
People respect the no. They do. if you, or sorry, people respect when you take the no. They really do. And if you are the best part is they're probably not going to remember you. So if you call back a week later, they're not going to know who you are unless they have specifically told you no. And then they will remember. So yeah, I would say that's good. When it comes to like really good clients, like what you said, when you actually create that relationship, I mean, it really is a value add. I think salespeople are a valuable asset to a cybersecurity organization because they are seeing what all of your competitors are doing. They are seeing what all of your clients are doing. They really like salespeople, like good salespeople have a really strong pulse on the industry in its real form.
If they're good.
Yes, exactly. And unfortunately, it's the bad ones that get a lot of press because you're just blown away that they would do this, right? Like, yeah, treat people like a human.
And that's what's frustrating to me, I think, is I try to educate, right? When I run into those salespeople who I can tell are just, they're kind of, you know, doing a thing and they don't really understand the industry. And my rule is I will try once. I will try once to educate you on either, you know, why your tactic isn't good or why you're barking up the wrong tree or whatever, right? Yeah. But there are those salespeople, and I think it actually stems, it's hard to even blame the salespeople. Maybe this is something else people need to realize because you just described it. 75 calls a day. Think about that, people, over 8 hours. That is 10 phone calls an hour. I mean, think about that pace. But what that drives is that drives the person who, all right, you're telling them no, but then you want to tell them why you're saying no. And that salesperson just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Right. They don't want to hear that. All they care is, okay, you're not interested. Fine. I'm moving on to the next. Cause they got to make 75 fucking calls in a day. Pardon my French.
Yeah.
That's the part that, you know, drives this.
Yeah. Well, and 3 leads a week, right? So 75 per day, 3 leads per week, which equates to meetings, right? Like if it's not an exact one-to-one. Like if, like, for instance, if I talk to a company and I'm like, okay, well, we're going to talk about MFA, but we're also going to talk about, I don't know, micro-segmentation, then that would be 2 opportunities. But that's per week that you're being told to do this. It's a lot of pressure, and they are not forgiving. It is not a forgiving profession.
No. Like I said, if I was working for commission, I'd be starving. You know, there's no two ways about that. And yeah, and that's the thing, right? I even think about that memes. And this is where I'm hoping that people listening are building some empathy here, because think about what that means for that person. Now you start off the beginning of the week, you know, you got to get 75 of these. So you're popping through calls. You get to Wednesday and you don't have one of those conversions yet. You haven't gotten something converted to an opportunity.
Yep.
Think about what those calls start to turn into. I mean, now I would assume they start to kind of get a little more desperate. Like, I got to get my 3. And so now you're going to try that much harder. You're going to get a little more aggressive. You're going to be, you know, in that state. And so this is where, man, like, I wish I knew what the answer was, but I don't know how we get sales organizations as a whole to think differently about how they approach sales, because this isn't, I mean, obviously they're profit driven, but I don't see where this is good for the industry at all. And the more chasm we dig out between, you know, buyers and sellers, the worse it's going to get.
Well, because you're serving 2 masters. I mean, you have the InfoSec people who are actually trying to do work, right? Like trying to keep things safe, keep their organization running, keep their own job. I mean, hello. Then you have like the salespeople who, like you said, they're trying to do the exact same thing, but they're on completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And so it's very challenging. And I want to be clear, the 75 calls and stuff, that's an inside role. Like that's a biz dev role. Like when you get into the account executive, it's a little different. Except when you're first starting out. I mean, you're building a book of business. You are literally starting from scratch. And it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. No, I think that's an important point. So is this point from Karen.
Oh, yeah.
Sales engineers. I've noticed this more and more lately. Like when I worked for the reseller, we did a lot of this. You know, there were very few sales calls, especially when you're talking about like account execs who aren't sitting on, you know, cold calls all day. They're actually going out to clients.
Right.
And, you know, they're very rarely would they have a meeting that didn't include a sales engineer, because yes, the sales engineers are that bridge. You know, they're the, hey, you know, yeah, we're still probably on commission, we're still driven by, you know, sales, but we have a little bit deeper knowledge of the product and we can share some of the more technical details. We can talk about configurations and other things. Yep. So is that something, I mean, is that exclusive to that account executive space, or is that something that we could build on even more?
So there are, I've seen, and I've been out of the sales game for a couple of years, but I have noticed a trend in like inside sales engineers, which is super cool. So effectively mirroring that same thing, so that whenever an inside salesperson gets on the call, like they have somebody technical who can talk that. I think that's important. I mean, sales engineers are arguably one of the most valuable members of cybersecurity. Like they see everything and they can talk technically as well. It's very valuable.
And that, so there's the key. And I think, you know, and I want to get off of the sales topic because I want to talk about marketing. We're like 26 minutes in. What am I doing? We're still talking about salespeople.
There's plenty to say.
But yeah, I mean, sales engineers are valuable to your salespeople. They're valuable to your, you know, to you as the cybersecurity person looking to buy a product, because they're the ones that are going to tell you, and they'll generally be a little more honest with you about, can this product do what I would need it to do or not? Am I looking at a place, or should I be looking somewhere else?
Honesty.
You'll still sugarcoat it, but you know. So how do you deal with this in a marketing sense now? Because, you know, working where you are, it sounds like you're bringing some really exciting stuff. You're sitting on, you know, like stacks of research from researchers and trying to bring that to the market. Mm-hmm. How does that fit into this whole equation?
Ironically, it's almost like same book, different chapter, right? So just same book, like different language, I should say. So what's interesting, I had worked in marketing and like startups before. And so we just kind of did everything, right? You had a small team and they like did everything. So research was part of my job before, but now it's my whole job. And it's very, very interesting. So like, to answer your question, researchers are dealing with like the cutting edge all the time, right? They are always looking for ways to break things. They are always looking for, oh, this new product came out. Great. What's wrong with it? Like they're very, very, very there. And then the industry is not necessarily there, right? Like there's a level of reality that has to come into play with putting out research work. So I feel like a lot of people assume that like security research is always like 0 days. No, it's not actually. There's a lot more out there than just that. But what's important is being able to tell that in an effective way. And so that's where my team comes in. So like a researcher is working on a project and they have a draft of a blog, and I come in and say, okay, so let's talk about what this does. And then they explain, okay, well, it does this. It's like, okay, so it can lead to denial of service. Oh boy. Like, let's talk about that. Let's talk about what the actual impact is. I feel like a lot of, I think our company is really unique in having a team dedicated to this because it is a unique challenge. Researchers are a very specific type of people, and that's why they're super good at what they do. But sometimes storytelling is not the it's very literal sometimes, and that's where somebody who speaks in unicorns instead of ones and zeros comes in.
Unicorns, but no, that's a really good point. I mean, because this is the thing. It sometimes you do run into those people where. Yeah, you used the word that I love to use for this, and that is story. Like, tell the story. Like, great, you found a way to, you know, manipulate, you know, whatever, and it gave you access to do this wonderful privilege escalation thing. But what does it actually mean? Mm-hmm. Because when you bring it back to the market, and you're going to say to, you know, you're going to hand this research to one of your salespeople, let's say, and say, you know, here's a new thing you can talk about with your buyers.
Yep.
if they can't communicate what, why that matters to the buyer, why that matters to the customer, why that matters to that CISO, that director, or that VP, or whoever it is that they're talking to,
yep,
it's not really useful. It doesn't resonate. It doesn't do anything. And I think this is when we think anywhere along the lines of delivering cybersecurity to non-security people, or even in this case, security people, but who are maybe not, you know, that deep into the ones and zeros of it to be able to decipher why is this a big deal.
Right.
You know, these are important concepts. It's that story.
Yeah.
So how does that shape for you then? If you're taking that, how do you bring that out?
Yeah. So what's funny about it is, like, I actually have to come up with multiple versions of the story. So it depends on who I'm talking to. There are a lot of people, especially anybody who's worked in a large organization, knows that, like, mm-hmm. getting something done involves multiple people and multiple things. So, like, working with the web team to make sure that it even happens, working with, like, legal to make sure we haven't, like, said anything bad, when a researcher brings me a story, like a researcher brings me, or sorry, when a researcher brings me a draft,
yeah,
then I say, okay, the blog itself is for a researcher audience. So that is on, like, that's y'all's. I will find ways to kind of massage it out, but, like, the technical specs, that's for the researcher. Then you have the executive summary, which, to your point, is intended for security people who may or may not care about the technical, like the IOCs and stuff. They may not care. They want to know about the, right. I mean, why would you? It's not your responsibility.
A team of people to worry about that.
Exactly. Exactly. So, like, making sure that that's handled, making sure that PR is briefed properly to talk to reporters, which is a totally different audience, making sure that social is written in a way to, like, talk to the masses, which is a subsect of the researcher crowd. I mean, like, when I bring a story to the market, I have at least 7 versions of that I need to be able to speak to. And it's really, with a really, really big caveat, without downplaying or bastardizing the research. This is very important. This is where I think a lot of agita comes between researchers and marketers, is that it becomes very black and white. The researchers want to be as technically accurate as possible, and the marketers want to make a headline. How do you make them work together? And so that's where I sit. I sit in the middle, and I listen to both sides and then say, okay, you know what? This can lead to denial of service, but you would need 7 different things in place, and you would need this to be able to do that. So why don't we say it could lead to, instead of this causes denial of service? No, it doesn't. Okay, let's be real. Like, there's an element of reality that has to be there.
Someone exploiting it. Causes.
Yeah, exactly.
This
exactly.
provides the open door. And yeah. Honestly, that's really cool, because when I worked in consulting, that was always a thing. That was a thing for us. Like, in any time, you know, as a managing consultant, I had a team of consultants that I worked with, and I reviewed their reports. That was always one of the big style things, was you never say will, always could.
Yes.
For mm-hmm. that exact reason. And what it comes down to as well, and you kind of alluded to this, and this is, like, a really important point, because it's something that I think, again, people who are in marketing who maybe are not security people, it takes them sometimes a while to learn this. There's a balance there,
yes.
right? You want something that's eye-catching, that's going to get people to read it, because this is information that they do legitimately need to be aware of.
Right.
But it can almost be counterproductive if you go too far, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
That stock imagery and all that.
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, I totally agree. And I think that that's where, like, some frustration is born out of too, is, like, not necessarily understanding that. I think when we think about, like, snafus, when a company puts out a bad campaign, a bad, you know, whatever, everybody talks about this company, this ethereal company was bad. When we're putting out a piece of research, that researcher's name is on it. Their legitimacy is on the line here. So, of course, like, we have to be very mindful of, like, play. But with that being said, the researchers will often downplay their work, and they downplay it because humble. They're humble people. Not all of them, like the charlatans obviously aren't, but the good ones really are. I found kind of humble. And then, but also they live on such an extreme that like, okay, oh, well, this vulnerability has been out for 5 years. Yeah. But I was in the sales role and I know how long it takes people to patch. Okay. This is an actual vulnerability. Like, so that's where the element of reality has to come in on that side too. And there's a lot of trust that has to be built for a team like this to work. A lot of trust.
Well, and like you said, you're kind of putting their name on, you know, words that you've edited, mm-hmm. right? At minimum. And I'm intentionally way understating your job right now. So please don't be offended.
I'm not.
But the thing is, you know, I would be willing to bet, just because I know it's how I felt when I was in a similar-ish position, mm-hmm. was, you know, we said before, the cybersecurity community is loud.
Yep.
And when you misstep, you hear about it. So if your marketing person puts something out in your name that comes off in a way you don't want it to, mm-hmm. and that'll blow back on you as the researcher.
Yes.
And we know this industry, for all its good and bad, is brutal.
Yeah.
When situations like that come out, if a researcher's work sounds like marketing fluff, they're going to get hammered.
Of course.
And it's because we have so many, you know, we do have these charlatans in our space and in our midst who, you know, are releasing shoddy or just completely fraudulent research in some cases.
Yeah.
Shall remain nameless, but we all know who I'm talking about. So, but that's the reality of it, you know? Yeah. And so you do have to be careful as a researcher. And the other thing is, you kind of put a target on your back. It's almost like going out as like a company and saying, we are super secure. We're the most secure company ever. Yeah. Get ready.
The Titanic was unsinkable too.
Call your IR team. Just tell them you said it, because they should be on call.
Yeah. Right. That's funny.
I get that. And that makes a lot of sense. So how do you find that balance then? And how do you kind of keep, you know, make sure that you're not getting your team, your research team into that position?
Yeah, that's a great question. The easy answer is just communication, right? I don't ever do anything without the researcher sign off. I always write, like, little things go a long way here, like only writing in suggesting mode and then allowing the researcher to accept it or force that conversation, right? Like, oh, well, I don't like that. Okay, but why? Why do you not like that? Like, let's really dig into that. I spend a lot of time in the why. And so to find, that's one element. The other element is just like truly making it a point to include the researcher as much as possible, as much as they want to be. Like, some of them are much more willing to go, like, do shows and all that kind of stuff, and that's awesome. Some of them really want to just kind of take the back seat, and that's totally fine. Like, I think just meeting them on their, my job is to make their life easier, truly. So like, however that looks for them is what I try to do.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I'm going to totally change gears now, because we are getting close to the end of time.
Oh man.
The end of time.
Flew by.
It's about to end. How did I just say that? We're getting close to the end of our time together. Let me try that again. You know, but one thing I want to kind of delve into, because we've touched on it a few times here, mm-hmm. and we've talked about the brutality sometimes faced by sales and marketing. What would you say to somebody who maybe has interest in getting into cybersecurity marketing, cybersecurity sales, like, you know, because there probably is some trepidation there. And I'm just thinking, here's my shameless plug. I'm sorry, I'm going to take 2 seconds to make the shameless plug, that next month I'm doing this whole 28-day get hired challenge. Mm-hmm. And so I want to, you know, this is one of the things we talked about it earlier. I included this in my book that, you know, sales and marketing and cybersecurity are important roles, and they are legitimate jobs in cybersecurity. So someone, you hear somebody's thinking about that as a career, what's your advice to them, or, you know, what would you tell them?
I would say, don't believe everything you read. And certainly, like, find a couple of people who you respect, like a couple of companies, because sometimes marketers sit in the background, so it's a little harder to see that. But find a couple of marketers that you respect and try and talk to them. I mean, it's so funny to me that people like think marketers are dumb, because if people knew how many like C levels actually have all of their blogs ghostwritten by marketers, it's shocking. So like find a couple of people that you really admire and talk to them. A lot of us are very willing to have that conversation, and decide what type of cybersecurity you're interested in. Because there's so much, to do. Like, what do you actually believe in? And start writing your own story from there, I would say. Fact checking. That's a great idea.
Statement right now. It was perfect. Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, and I think that's great advice, you know, cause it's, and that's what I think we want. And so here's my little pontification for the rest of the cybersecurity community. Instead of talking about, you know, how horrible salespeople are, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I will still be publishing when I get really awful emails. I'll still throw that stuff on social media. But, you know, if we're encouraging people who maybe have this interest, kind of help them understand on their way in the door how to do that job well. What's important to you? Understanding there's always going to be salespeople. Understanding that you actually do need salespeople, because every one of those cool, funky, blinky, light new tools you've got sold to you by a salesperson somewhere along the way. You know, and you
wouldn't be aware of it if they weren't there.
If it wasn't for marketing,
yeah,
you wouldn't even know that this thing existed. So understanding that, think instead, how can we educate these people and help them understand how to do that job better? Am I on the right track?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, a subsect of this is like, talk to your technical folks, like talk to them. I mean, I learned so much getting into the InfoSec Twitter scene. I learned so much. And there are so many amazing content creators in our industry who really are good at communicating to the non-technical people. I think a trap that I don't want people to fall into is like, oh my gosh, well, I can't get into marketing because I don't know how to code, or I don't know, like, if I can't speak to a cybersecurity person. What, I have a theater degree, and I was talking to CISOs of Fortune 500s with the same, it can happen, right? It just takes time. Like, it don't expect something too early. Be reasonable and be kind to yourself, because the industry will not be.
On that happy note,
it's the end of times, right? That's what we said. That's what we agreed on.
Yeah, right. So, that came in really loud. Let's try that again. So, yeah, on that happy note. No, seriously though, Trisha, this has been amazing. I've had an absolute blast. I thank you so much for joining us, and thank all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. I think these are important topics, you know, and hopefully we can kind of find ways to be a little better in how we work with each other. So till next time, you know, this will be converted to a podcast format. It'll be available a few days on the ITSP Magazine website. Keep coming back. We'll keep bringing you new shows with new great guests. As always, if you have a guest you'd like to see on this show, somebody who hasn't been on, or maybe we've been on, you want me to bring them back, I don't care. But let me know, because I'm just one person. I would love to hear your thoughts. And if you know an organization that would like to associate their brand with what we do here, let me know that too, because we're always looking for that too. So until next time, Trisha, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you again right here on Securing Bridges.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Securing Bridges podcast with Alyssa Miller. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.